Welcome to today's SNEB webinar discussing the Nutrition Educator Competencies. My name is Rachel Dager, and I'm the Executive Director of SNEB, and glad to have you with us today. Just a little bit of housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, you will see handouts, and there is a copy of today's presentation, as well as the competencies themselves in a separate handout document. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question block so that we can moderate those to our panel. We have a very distinguished panel today. I'll introduce those this group in just a moment, but just a reminder then, there'll be a short survey when I close out the webinar, and we appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future sessions. And then watch for an email from probably Wednesday, or by Friday of this week. The email will come from GoToWebinar, but it'll include the link to the handout, the recording, and your CEU certificates. So with that, I will get us started. So we have the panel today. We have Sarah Ash, Isabel Contento, and Melissa Olfert, who are three of the original authors of the competency effort. We also have the most recent task force members with us, Sarah Colby, Ellie Dodge, Elizabeth Hall, Nurgle Fitzgerald, Stacia Norden, Yasha Steinmetz is also serving on that task force. But you'll hear more about the work that both of these groups have been doing to advance the nutrition educator competencies. And I will turn it over to Nurgle to get started.
Thank you very much, Rachel. Let's see over here. Good morning, everyone. There's a slight delay on the slide. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for the SNEB webinar on Nutrition Education Competencies for Promoting Healthy Individuals, Communities, and Food Systems. I'm Nurgle Fitzgerald from Rutgers University. Let's see if we can go to the next slide here.
Melissa, you can turn your video off.
All right, we are having slight delay in advancing the slides here. I'll just wait for just a second here. All right, Rachel, this is not advancing. There's, for some reason,
Rachel?
Sorry. Okay. Let's. Nurgle, why don't you go ahead and let's try it again.
So maybe you can advance. It's only a couple of slides for me.
Okay, sure.
All right. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Thank you. SNEB as a society with a primary focus on nutrition education and behavior has members practicing in a variety of settings globally. These settings may involve educating future practitioners and researchers or conducting research, creating and implementing programs for a diverse range of communities, or advocating for better food systems and policies. The common thread to all of these settings is the fact that professional competency standards are needed in all of them. Recognizing this essential need, SNEB has been leading the development of nutrition educator competencies for many decades. The first nutrition educator competencies were issued in 1987, and after extensive updates, the current competencies were adopted in 2016. In addition, a position paper focusing on these competencies has been in review in the works as we speak. Our speakers in this webinar will give you a much more comprehensive perspective of the history and content of these competencies, as well as some of the ways to use the competencies. plans must turn into action to make a difference in real life. Following a strategic planning process in 2018, SNEB leadership had established a specific goal for the SNEB members to be leaders in comprehensive nutrition education research, practice, and advocacy at individual, community, food systems, and policy levels. To help achieve this goal, one of the activities was determined to be forming a competencies task force, which was charged with developing a communication and implementation plan for the nutrition educator competencies. We are now witnessing the action steps contributing to the realization of this goal as a part of the SNEB's strategic plan. Our speakers on this webinar, Dr. Sarah Ash, Isabel Contento, and Melissa Alford, have been dedicated contributors and creators of the competencies, and their work has been fueling the process and the progress of the current competencies task force. As Rachel mentioned, the task force, let me say a few things about the newest current competencies task force. It started as a small group first, including Dr. Melissa Alford, myself from the board of directors, and Rachel Lager as the executive director. Dr. Alford led the initial work to establish a vision about what the actions of the task force might look like. Then additional members joined the task force, including Dr. Sarah Colby, Dr. Ellie Dodge, Elizabeth Hall as a graduate student representative, Ms. Stacia Norden from Living and Sharing Sustainable Nutrition in Malawi with Global Perspectives, and Dr. Yasha Steinmetz from University of Wisconsin. And I'm very happy to be part of this task force myself. Of course, Rachel is always part of all of these organizations and keeps us on track for us to continue to make progress. Later in this webinar, we will provide a brief overview of the progress of the competencies task force and ongoing action steps. I will now pass the mic to Dr. Sarah Ash to tell us about the history of the nutrition educator competencies.
Thank you, Nurgle. Let's see if I can advance the slides. Well, Rachel, whatever it was that you had working before is not working now for me either. Okay. All right. So this goes back to the 1980s when what used to be called SNE approved a set of competencies for the academic preparation of nutrition education specialists. They did this by surveying national nutrition education coordinators, along with academic institutions training nutrition educators. The competencies were reviewed by a committee with representation from relevant professional organizations. And you can see from the title that back then, the potential application was somewhat limited to colleges and universities that were training nutrition educators. And you'll see it at the end of our presentation that we hope that there'll be a much broader use for these competencies going forward. Oops, sorry. So the original competencies were organized into five categories, 27 competencies in all. They included food and nutrition content, eating behavior, behavioral and educational theory, research methods and program evaluation, and design and delivery of nutrition education. And this is the publication that arose from those competencies. In the journal. It included a little bit of background and justification. And just as a heads up, we are currently, we hope, in the final stages of getting the current competencies published as a position paper in the journal. We have about 2 weeks ago submitted the document for review. It will contain provide all of the competencies along with detailed rationale for each of them. Today, we're just going to give you a brief overview of the competencies and their rationale. So be looking for that. You'll get much more information about them from that position paper when it's published. So some 20 years later, there was tremendous expansion of knowledge regarding behavior change theory. There was increased awareness of the importance of physical activity, a new recognition of the role of nutrition educators in promoting sustainable food systems, along with the recognition of the need to connect nutrition education with food access programming, as well as changes to food policy. And so the society decided to create a task force to review and update those original 1987 competencies. So the initial task force that was put together had broad representation from the society membership, both national and international. The task force surveyed SNEB members across all the divisions and requested input from relevant professional organizations such as the American Society for Nutrition. The task force engaged in extensive review and revisions, and it wrote the competencies using what some people refer to as accessible terms. So rather than saying that a nutrition educator should understand something or appreciate something, all of the competencies use language that you might be more familiar with and when you write your learning objectives or outcomes for your programs or courses that can more easily be evaluated. So terms like identify, describe, apply, evaluate. You may be familiar with these as part of Bloom's taxonomy if you've done some teaching, but the hope is that they will be more easily utilized in an evaluation situation. And so in 2016, the board approved what came to be called the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior Nutrition Educator Competencies for Promoting Healthy Individuals, Communities, and Food Systems. So the final set of competencies were organized into 10 categories and were 45 in total. So quite an expansion from the original 5 categories with 27 competencies. They were further separated into 2 components. 6 categories focused on content, and you can see them there: basic food nutrition knowledge, food science, nutrition across the life cycle, physical activity, food nutrition policy, and agricultural production food systems. And then 4 on process: written, oral, and social media communication, behavior and education theory, nutrition education program design, implementation and evaluation, and nutrition education research methods. And we're going to go over each of these just very briefly. Just to let you know that these are available from the Society website and in PDF form. Obviously, you can't see them here, but I will just point out that we have numbered them. And so you may be seeing these numbers referred to in the future. For example, you may be asked to indicate which number competency does a session proposal represent or refer to. And here are the rest of them. Now, those obviously don't make a great visual. And so we've also created this graphic that we hope reflects the fact that the competencies themselves have embedded within them the socio-ecological model. And so you'll see the content and process categories with the levels of the socio-ecological model embracing them. So I'm going to start with the content competencies, again listed here, and I'm going to provide you just with a brief rationale for each. And again, just keep in mind that the position paper, when it's published, will go into each of these in much greater detail. So we know that there are thousands and thousands of new foods introduced into the food supply every year. I mean, who knew just a few years ago that parents might be trying to decide if they should be feeding their child a kale smoothie from a squeezable pouch? So food-related decisions are just increasingly difficult for the consumer. Coupled with that is the increased number of unreliable sources of nutrition information, especially courtesy of the internet. This includes bloggers and influencers, as well as all the diet program and product promoters. And so it's not surprising that surveys show tremendous amount of consumer confusion regarding what to eat. Coupled with that, we know that nutrition research is continually advancing. That's the nature of research, that it can change over time, and that can be difficult to communicate to consumers. And government-based dietary recommendations have to advance and evolve with it. And so therefore, the competencies under basic food nutrition knowledge are that educators should be able to describe the basic structures and functions of the essential nutrients and food group sources for each, explain the appropriate national, international nutrient references, explain the appropriate national, international dietary guidelines and food guidance systems, and explain how to use food labeling. They should also be able to explain the dietary prevention and management of the major diet-related public health issues, describe the basic types of approaches used to study diet-health relationships, and describe their advantages and limitations, critically evaluate food and nutrition claims, and critically evaluate the source materials that provide nutrition information. For nutrition across the life cycle, we certainly know that nutritional needs change over time, and therefore nutrition education programming must be tailored to the participants' nutritional needs using evidence-based recommendations, such as in the United States, the dietary reference intakes. And so nutrition educators should be able to identify the primary dietary issues for each phase of the life cycle, use information from the appropriate national or international nutrient references and dietary guidelines to make dietary recommendations for each phase of the life cycle. For food science, we know that safe and good tasting food is as important as food that is helpful, needs to taste good, or we'd like for it to taste good. And more generally, that food literacy is important, and that includes having skills in planning, purchasing, preparation, and cooking. We also know that the food market is increasingly dominated by highly processed foods, and that foodborne illnesses contribute significantly to morbidity and mortality. And most of these are preventable, especially those that might occur in the home. Therefore, nutrition educators should be able to describe the functions of food ingredients and food processing techniques and their effects on the nutrient content of foods, describe the basic types of culinary practices, including how flavor, texture, and appearance of foods are created or maintained, describe the potential sources of food contamination and safe food handling practices, and explain how to plan, select, prepare, and manage foods to enhance the well-being of individuals, families, communities, and the food system. Physical activity obviously is important for everyone, regardless of their health status or physical ability. And we know that diet and physical activity are complementary categories for promoting health and chronic disease. They share similar behavior-focused and theory-based approaches that may include common determinants or mediators of behavior change, and that programs that target both at the same time may produce better health outcomes than those targeting them individually. And so nutrition educators should be able to describe the background, purpose, and appropriate national or international physical activity guidelines, describe the benefits of regular physical activity for preventing and managing public health issues, including chronic diseases, and identify physical activity opportunities in daily living. For food and nutrition policy, there are myriad governmental agencies that regulate food, food marketing, food systems. Just a few of them are represented here by their logos. And these agencies also support nutrition and as well as health education. Policy decisions, including those related to revisions of dietary guidelines, are informed by research, and this research is also guided by government agencies. In addition, in the United States, SNAP Ed mandates the inclusion of policy, system, and environmental change interventions, and such interventions require collaboration with community members. Therefore, nutrition educators should be able to describe the roles of government agencies in regulating the manufacturing, labeling, and advertising of foods and supplements, describe the roles of government agencies in regulating food systems and the food supply, describe the history, purpose, and funding of key legislation that authorized programs supporting nutrition education, research, and food assistance. and they should be able to describe the history and current roles of governmental and non-governmental organizations that develop and implement nutrition education, health promotion, or food security activities, and describe ways to collaborate to create communities and settings in which healthy food options are easy, affordable, and desired, and unhealthy foods are less prominent and less desired. Agricultural production food systems. The need for a healthy, sustainable food system is gaining attention from all sectors, governments, businesses, the public. There are significant environmental implications associated with agricultural production and food systems, such as greenhouse gas emissions, pesticide, land, and water use. In addition, there are lots of terms associated with agricultural and food production systems that are confusing to the public, and just a few of them again are reflected here. Also, increasingly highly processed food has potential environmental implications, not just the agricultural production side. These include the use of additives as well as packaging. And nutrition research needs to connect societal, environmental, and economic challenges. So therefore, nutrition educators should be able to describe differences in agricultural practices and their potential effects on food choices and food availability, explain the effects of various food processing, packaging, distribution, and marketing practices on availability, food choices and nutritional value, as well as the amount and types of additives, contaminants, and pathogens in foods, explain the relationships between natural resources and the quantity and quality of the food and water supply, describe ways to collaborate with other stakeholders to promote policy supporting systems that produce healthy food. And now I'm going to turn it over to Isabel to talk about the process categories.
Hi there. I will go through each of the categories that are involved in the process of delivering nutrition education. And as a reminder, the categories are behavior and education theory, nutrition education program design, implementation and evaluation, and written and oral social communication, as well as nutrition education research. Okay, let's see. All right, so research over the past couple of decades has made it now clear that knowledge is not enough to produce behavior change, that there are complex relationships among the biological, psychosocial, cultural, environmental factors, which are shown in the graphic on the right, which shows individual, food-related, person-related, and environmental-related factors. And theories of behavior change have evolved to provide an explanation for how to bring about change given this context. Okay. It's also become clear that for programs to be effective, they need to focus on specific behaviors and then address the determinants and the mediators of behavior change. And these are shown in the graphic on the right, and you can see that there are a whole list of the determinants and food-related, motivational, facilitating that can bring about behavior change in the context of environmental supports and constraints. Psychosocial theories have been developed about behaviors and behavior change, which describe how these determinants are related to behavior and provide a foundation for predicting change. Now, teaching is not just telling. Theories of teaching and instruction can provide guidance for nutrition educators. And these different theories of teaching and instruction from the field of education tell us that we need a scaffolded series of educational activities that move from activation of the group or the audience to motivation, to skill building, to application. That's just in the design of the nutrition education. But in terms of actually delivering it, learning theory can provide a guide. and it suggests that we need active, hands-on, collaborative learning that is appropriate to the audience learning styles and their cultural backgrounds. Therefore, nutrition educators should be able to describe the biological, psychological, social, political, and economic determinants of eating behavior and the associated opportunities and barriers to achieving optimal health and quality of life. They should also be able to describe the major psychosocial theories of behavior and behavior change and apply them to eating behavior and behavior change. They should also be able to describe the major theories of teaching and learning and apply them to nutrition education. Nutrition educators should in addition to what we've just talked about, nutrition education needs to be designed and implemented and evaluated. So there's a competency in this particular category as well. And what we have found is that a systematic process is necessary to design programs that are behaviorally focused and that use the appropriate psychosocial theories as frameworks. And this process is shown in the graphic at the bottom of the slide. So you start with identifying nutritional behavioral needs of the population in order to select the behavior change goal. You conduct careful assessments of the audience to identify the determinants from psychosocial theory that are important for these goals. Then you write educational objectives for these mediators and create activities. And then you create educational plans that tie all the activities together. It is also now clear that nutrition education involves working with groups, often large, and in a variety of settings, both public and private. Group facilitation must promote respectful discussion and create a safe environment. Stakeholders require evaluation of program effectiveness. And so this program evaluation is based on the behavior change goals that were set, mediators of change, and program objectives. In addition to these outcomes, process evaluations measure the degree to which the program was implemented as planned, was delivered completely, and received by the audience. Therefore, given all of this that we now know about the delivering of nutrition education, nutrition educators should be able to assess the nutrition and behavior needs of populations, determine the behavior change goals of the program, identify theory-based motivators and facilitators of change using a participatory approach, including social and environmental influences, and then select the appropriate theoretical framework. Nutrition educators should also be able to develop educational objectives based on the theory-based mediators of change, design behavior change strategies or techniques that would be effective in achieving these objectives, and design or select activities and materials that match the objectives and are appropriate for diverse audiences. Nutrition educators should also be able to develop a timeline and a budget for program development, implementation, and evaluation. They should also be able to design process and outcome evaluation plans, some simple, some complex, using the appropriate data collection methods. And then they should be able to revise the program based on process and outcome evaluation findings as appropriate. Now, written, oral, and social media communication is another category of competencies. Nutrition education includes communicating in ways that engage, motivate, educate to promote healthy behaviors. Now, these could be written, oral, or social media based. These messages must be memorable, meaningful, straightforward, well-designed, attractive, and culturally appropriate. This has become increasingly clear given that materials that are produced these days are colorful and look interesting, and people are using various kinds of digital and other kinds of media. So nutrition education involves all of these other mechanisms or venues in addition to groups. And the educator characteristics influence audience reception. The credibility, trustworthiness, and the dynamism of the educator is very important. Nutrition education is bi-directional, and participants that involves the share participants sharing interests and experience along with their barriers. And the fact that they share this means that they can improve program effectiveness by improving the educator understanding of their audience and better communication all around. Therefore, nutrition educators should be able to communicate effectively in written, visual, and oral forms in ways that are appropriate for diverse audiences. They should be able to facilitate communication from and between clients so that they can express their beliefs and attitudes and define their needs and share experiences. Educators should be able to engage and educate through simple, clear, motivational language appropriate for diverse audiences. And they should be able to advocate effectively for action-oriented nutrition education and healthy diets in various sectors and settings. And this relates to the social ecological model, where nutrition educators can work with their colleagues to make changes in the environment as well. A final category of nutrition education competencies are the nutrition education research methods. Nutrition education is an evolving field. It is driven by research that includes qualitative and quantitative approaches. Research and practice are mutually reinforcing. Research can inform effective approaches to program design and delivery. And at the same time, practice can identify areas that need more study and suggest appropriate approaches. Therefore, nutrition educators should be able to analyze, evaluate, interpret nutrition education research, and apply it to practice. So these are the 10 categories of competencies. And now I will turn it over to our colleague, Melissa Olford, to talk about how we might apply these in practice. So to you, Melissa.
Sorry, just trying to make sure I can advance. Thank you so much, Sarah and Isabel, for going over our 45 competencies that fall within the 10 categories, six of which were content focused and four of which were process focused. These competencies are only effective and impactful if put into an applied arena. So with over 60 attendees today, you can imagine we have a great deal of individuals getting very excited about thinking how they can apply these in their everyday individual and personal realm. Although these potential uses that I'm going to cover right now may not fully include every aspect that you are thinking of, we understand that they will be continuing to evolve. And our goal in mentioning these five possible outlets of use of the nutrition competencies is to have employers, trainers, educators, and nutrition-focused professionals consider the application of these 10 categories. These competencies may be used by directors of graduate programs, and it could be a variety of different graduate programs, such as nutrition-focused, nutrition education, dietetics, public health nutrition. And they can serve as guidelines for planning curricula to provide training for their graduates to act effectively as nutrition educators in a whole variety of different settings. The nutrition competencies may be used as a model for public and such as SNAP-Ed or WIC or FNEP or even private and nonprofit sectors that fall into public health, agriculture, and many other sectors to create and disseminate a workforce that is trained and has sufficient professional development and continuing education in nutrition education following these 45 competencies. Further, the 10 nutrition competency areas categories may be used as a guide for employers hiring nutrition educators to create and support those positions in job descriptions and evaluation. On a more personal growth and professional challenge, these competencies may be used as a checklist by individuals who are planning how to improve and how to really elevate their, to determine areas of strength and expertise and areas of focused need for growth to be well-rounded nutrition educators, and further to mentor those that they are rubbing shoulders with within their own working environment. The second bullet there, policymakers and advocacy groups can use the competencies to help plan stronger, more comprehensive, diverse, sustainable nutrition education policies. And lastly, many other wide-ranging educators, including health workers and others, as an inspiration for more high-quality nutrition education, such as K through 12 schooling and community-based or even medical or healthcare-based educational settings. So now that you have kind of your thinking cap on and within the variety of the 60 attendees, we know there is probably many more aspects that we haven't thought of. So this is the next phase, is the task force that was put in play and charged with the understanding of thinking about how do we evaluate the dissemination and implementation of these. So I'm gonna pass this on to Dr. Sarah Colby, who is heading up this task force, and she's gonna share a bit about what they've been doing and what her group looks to see to be engaged in the future.
Great, thank you so much, Melissa. I appreciate it very much. And hopefully I have control over, yeah, great, the slides have changed. So as you've heard, we've been working this year with a fantastic task force, as you can see here. We have currently developed a survey and disseminated that survey to SNEB members to find out what members currently know about the competencies, what members want to know about the competencies, how they see those kind of competencies playing in their future careers, where they think the needs for development are, as well as interest in professional development opportunities to actually take a survey, for instance, online that would assess your own competencies in each of the areas that you've heard described today. And then you'd be able to see back for your own personal professional development, not to be reported anyplace else, but how you score. So where are your strengths? Where are your opportunities for growth? So that's a tool that may come out of this work. As you can see, some other things have been going on. We've organized this webinar that you're here today. Thank you for attending with this amazing panel who have really done all of the work to pull together these competencies to bring us to where we are today. During this work, we also were able to see that we need better ways to communicate about the competencies. So we were able to some icons have been being developed. We were able to review those, make some modifications, some suggestions. You'll start to see those icons used in a variety of ways. The first and foremost will be at the conference that hopefully everybody here will be attending very soon. And, oh, whoops, I'm not sure why that has jumped forward. I did not do that. But you will see those competencies at that conference, at the conference coming up, and hopefully before each presentation, you'll notice some slides that will talk to you about what that information and how it's related to competencies. We also will have a journal club this fall that will focus on the competencies, so you'll be able to see how those each highlighted competencies are actually in practice and see research related to those competency areas. So we also hopefully will be working on that development of the professional development assessment process that you will see out hopefully next year. Those are our current and plans. Please, if you haven't already taken that survey, take the survey. We'd love to hear from you. And I will turn this over to Nurgul to wrap us up. Thank you, Nurgul.
Thank you very much, Sarah. And thank you for advancing the slide too. So this is our last slide. I hope you all enjoyed today's webinar presented by the original authors of the Nutrition Educator Competencies, who provided us with the history, rationale, and the content of the competencies. You can find the competencies at the SNEB website link shown here on the slide. And we hope to see the competencies position paper published in the near future as well. In this webinar, we also took a glimpse into the newest phase in SNEB's progress on investing in the competency and leadership of nutrition educators in all settings. Looking forward, as a reflection of a collective and coordinated effort, we will continue to see a focus on the nutrition educator competencies in a range of SNEB activities. Some of these were mentioned by our speakers. These activities currently follow a three-pronged approach by making progress on assessment and evaluation, awareness, and application of the competencies. For example, the competencies are used in increasingly used in SNEB's programming, such as the annual meeting and journal club sessions, to increase awareness as well as to encourage the use of them. In fact, there is a session about competencies on the first day of the annual meeting on July 20th. And this webinar, as Sarah mentioned, this webinar is also a part of the competency dissemination plan for the same purpose. Earlier this year, Jennifer Wilkins, the president of the SNEB, published an editorial highlighting the history, importance, and ongoing developments regarding the competencies. More recently, you might have received a survey asking you about the competencies. I hope you filled out that short survey. The task force implemented this survey to assess the current level of awareness and usage of competencies among members, which will serve as a baseline for us to go forward. This survey also has the forward-looking purpose of connecting with any experts within our membership who may take part in the future webinars or programming related to the competencies so that we can continue to learn from each other. We will be releasing the survey results in the coming years, the coming months rather, not years, hopefully months sooner than that. The current task force is also working on a professional development assessment process using the competencies. So please watch out for an email inviting members to get involved and contribute to the progress. For sure, there has been a tremendous amount of work done over the past decades to bring the nutrition educator competencies to its current state. And we have more ways to go to establish widespread use and continuing development of the competencies so that all our members can achieve their best potential with the help of the SNEB. We'll look forward to hearing from all SNEB members and the division leadership for collaborative input and progress towards this common goal. Thanks to all of our wonderful speakers, and thank you all for participating. And I believe we have some time to take some questions in the next few minutes.
Definitely, yes. And if you have any questions for our panelists or presenters, please type them in the chat box at this time, and I'll be able to read those questions to our group of panelists. So I will start us off with a question, actually, if that's okay, because I am interested in hearing from, and if all the panelists want to back on their cameras, we can take a look at you guys. Thanks. Talk to me about, I know you gave great background on the history of when this, in fact, the 87, I definitely didn't know that was the beginning of these competencies. Talk to me how you envisioned when you first jumped into doing this work, what you envisioned, what you hope for the future for these competencies really to look like. And Melissa, I may turn this over to you first.
Well, I'm the newbie with the position paper crew of trying to get this, I think, put into maybe a serious venue. So much of the time that we've had these competencies that we've used over really almost, 30 years, moving towards 40 years, they haven't been peer reviewed and accepted. And so I think that that's been some of my motivation of having it be evidence-based and science-based and adopted by my peers within not only SNEB, but really across all nutrition education. And this webinar is open to individuals outside of the SNEB membership. And we are hoping to really do a lot more support of the field nationally as well as internationally. And SNEB has an incredible international reach. So these competencies have an opportunity to really be evidence-based support for so much of that applied sense as these employers and even scientists and other authors are looking for some substantial peer-reviewed competencies.
And Sarah, I'll just follow up by saying that when I first got involved, which I do believe was actually 2008, so quite a while ago, the society initially was interested in continuing on with what Isabel and her colleagues had done back in the 80s, which was to develop some competencies primarily for the use of the training of nutrition educators. And there was some talk at one time about even creating something along the lines of a certification. And what I find, I think, most exciting actually is thinking about their uses, not just by employers and academic institutions, but more recently by the society members themselves for professional development. And I'm really excited about the society embracing the competencies and using them in its own work particularly in, you know, in annual meetings and webinars to really help with professional development of nutrition educators, whether they ever are used by employers or, you know, other governmental agencies or nonprofits, but to be used by the society itself, I think is really exciting.
Great. I have some other questions here. Fantastic.
I can just add a little bit because I can't believe it, but in fact, I was involved in the 1987 competencies. And that was the end of a probably 6 to 8 year process as well. And at that time, the United States had introduced something called Nutrition Education Training Program and had a nutrition education coordinator in each of the 50 states. And it provided nutrition education at 50 cents per student in the schools. And so there was discussion about, well, who should be providing this nutrition education? And so it was couched, there was big discussion about extension educators and other people. And so the word nutrition education specialist was sort of created to denote that there might be a group of people who have special skills in the educational aspect of it. And that one involved a survey of 900 people, and the 50 state coordinators, et cetera. So but the field has changed a lot. So it was very exciting for me to see that it was time to update and these competencies to make them more broad. And I think the original competency committee, 2008, had long discussions about who these competencies were for. And that and our committee included international members as well. So we wanted to make sure that the competencies were applicable internationally. And I think it's really exciting that at this coming annual meeting that from what I can see from the program, that each of the programs has been identified as to which competencies they cover. So I think this is a wonderful outcome for this very long process.
I agree. It really is fantastic to see it progress. I have some questions. In light of recent events, how do you see diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as racism in the food system, being incorporated into these competencies?
Well, I guess.
Could you repeat the question, Sarah?
Yes. In light of the recent, and actually it is no longer showing, sorry. So in light of recent events, how do you see these competencies being adjusted to address issues of racism and inequities in the food system? Synopsis of the question. And if anybody has other points they can clarify, please add.
Well, I can get started. I think it's very important and exciting that the competencies include the category of agriculture and food production, and so that there's that nutrition educators become aware of the food system and how food is produced and distributed. And I think that's one place where racism and how it's affected the production of the food system can be incorporated into all of the nutrition education we provide. And I think also there's now competency about food policy, which is extremely important for ensuring that all people have access to an equitable, healthy, and sustainable food system.
And there is specific reference to food access issues. So although it's not, we may not use those terms specifically, I would hope that they would come under a variety of headings actually within the competencies.
Go ahead, Melissa.
Oh, I can wait. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, I also wanted to add something here. I appreciate the question. Thank you for sending that question. The way I see the competencies, not as a concrete document to be etched in stone and then applied for years and years to come, but a living, breathing document that has to change with the changing times and respond to the current needs of not just our members and beyond, but the needs of the greater society that we all live in and serve. So for that reason, I see another perspective in this, and this is the beauty of including our members in the process and having an active task force on it. We have to have representation. We have to have different perspectives represented in the process, actively part of the process. But also, I think many of the members might have seen the letter, the statement from the SNEB membership that went out about racial inequities and what SNEB need to be doing in the future. So as highlighted in that letter from the leadership, we have to be looking at our own processes and see what we are doing right, what we are doing wrong. Is there anything else that we need to be doing? So it has to be an ongoing process. And I would encourage everyone, every single one, in and outside the SNEB membership who might be working in this field, to be involved and to provide input. And if we don't see something as a task force or others who might be actively working on different action steps, to get involved and wake us up, help us out, let's work together. So it has to be a living document to respond to the changing times.
Thank you.
We've all heard the saying, I'll be quick, Sarah, I know you need to wrap this up. We've all heard the saying, there's no better time than the present. And so it could not be a better time to get a substantial position paper that we can jump off of in a dynamic process moving forward and continue to think about how we need to evolve with what is happening in the current world around us. And it's not that these are necessarily new issues, but they're just front and center, and they do impact what nutrition educators are working to do. So with that said, I think that it's a great time for a lot of action and the dynamic process of reviewing these competencies. And maybe we need to, you know, as we're moving forward, once the position paper is put forth, we think about how frequently we revisit it, somewhat like the USDA Dietary Guidelines for Americans. Maybe we revisit it every 5 years by members and ask them what is urgent and important and what's not, you know, what's not evident and being a part of those competencies.
Well, I could just add that I think the competencies were written broadly enough that lots of issues as they come up over the years could be incorporated into any, almost all of them at some point, including things of racism and food equity.
And this is really interesting and important discussion. I will let Rachel decide on whether or not we are allowed to go over our time at all, because I have some additional questions. If I need to wrap up right now, we can. Otherwise, I can continue with questions.
Rachel, continue on. There's some great questions in there.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so we will be going over just a little bit. If you need to leave, this will be recorded. You can see the questions later. And I hope our panelists are okay with staying for just a few more minutes. The next question is, what about including the effects of the food system and agricultural practices on the environment? This person indicates it feels extremely important these days with climate change and other pressing environmental issues that can be directly related to how we produce food.
I think that's in the agricultural section of the competencies. We did not read every word of the competencies. You should go back to the original. But I think climate change and a whole bunch of things related to that are in the agriculture and food production section.
Go back and I can go scroll back and try to find them if you want.
And I think this is a great time to point out, Rachel, can you share with the group where these competencies are located so that if people want to read those kind of details later, they have access?
Yeah, definitely. There was a handout in the GoToWebinar toolbar that should have the PDF with both pages, but then there's a link on the SNEB website as well under About, and then it lists some history of the competencies, and then we'll probably post this material there as well.
And I also, there was a linked with this question was about access to the survey. So I believe will a recording come out with a link to the recording?
I'll include the survey link in the follow-up email for this program.
Perfect, thanks. Okay, next question is, it says the competencies are comprehensive, but do not seem to be very specific to what nutrition educators are. Is there a possibility to look at how specific positions, such as nutrition evaluator, nutrition coordinator, et cetera, are relevant to specific competencies?
This may very likely be the next generation of work done by certain task force groups that see a need for. I guess specifying it based on maybe job description is what I'm understanding that question to be. But there's so much diversity in what nutrition educators do, where they come from, the environment they work in, the corporations they work with, the institutions they educate in, that it would probably be very broad, even within those different scopes of work.
I guess I would say too that although it, you know, 45 competencies across 10 categories seems like a lot, I would hope that over someone's professional career, they would think it important to at least become exposed to all of them. It may not be something that you use in your day-to-day job description, but just as we might think of a registered dietitian and nutritionist being trained across all aspects of nutrition and diet therapy, that individual may be working in a clinical environment and not be doing nutrition education or vice versa. But I would like to think that someone who considers himself or herself a nutrition educator would think it important to at least become exposed to the the content behind each of these and use the annual meetings, for example, on the journal as a way to do that.
And this will be our last question for today. It is, where do you see the integration of these competencies to equip clinical nutrition leaders and those in other roles outside traditional community health education?
So I just had, this begs the question, what tomorrow is traditional education? I think it's changing in front of our very eyes. So this may actually be a jumping off point for how we support professional development in a virtual sense for people to really be able to glean at a higher depth these different 45 competency areas and what that might look like. And so that's sort of then the future of education within nutrition education, possibly support through SNEB, but support within these different higher education institutions. And I believe, you know, it was mentioned about the certification and what that certification would look like. And possibly it may be a comprehensive certification, or there might be components that people drill down a little bit deeper in based on what their job description are.
And I would add that, you know, it sounds like the question is, okay, you're not a nutrition educator, but you are involved in activities that may require some nutrition education in your clinical setting. For example, maybe you're a physician. And my hope is that individual might wonder, well, what is the best way for me to educate my patients regarding nutrition, and how do I get them to change, to, you know, help, how do I help facilitate behavior change? And, you know, it'd be nice if there was a professional nutrition educator to help that physician do that. But in the absence of that, perhaps this document could serve, or these competencies could serve as a roadmap. Now, you know, they don't necessarily need to know all of them, but they could look at the, for example, the process competencies and realize that there is, you know, there is theory, there is evidence base for how best to do nutrition education. So I'm not sure if that really addresses the question, but I could see it as a guide for those outside the field if they wanted to engage in some, for example, nutrition education on their own.
And Rachel, I'll turn it back over to you for housekeeping, please.
Excellent, thank you. Thank you all for a great presentation. Just a reminder, when I close out the webinar, there'll be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this webinar, as well as any suggestions on future webinars, either on the topic of the competencies or other topics. And we'll get an email out through GoToWebinar this week with a link to the recording, the CEU certificate. I'll link the competencies themselves, as well as the competency survey link. And as a couple of folks have mentioned, you're probably aware that the annual conference virtually is going to be presented the week of July 20th through the 24th. There's 3 hours of core programming each day, one keynote, and then a block of concurrent sessions. But then outside of that core 3 hours, there's other activities, some oral abstracts, there's JNEB rapid reviews and poster abstracts. So there's other activities that you can participate in as you have the time to do it. But everything is being recorded and available after the conference itself. So encourage you to look at the conference programming, register before the July 16th deadline, and share that information out with your colleagues. It's a great almost 50 hours of excellent programming available to you online. So we hope to see you at the virtual conference, and thank you all for attending today.